Welcome to the Justified Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Justified City Primeval. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 3, Backstabbers. A lot of backstabbers in this episode. Aaron, what'd you think of it?
I thought this was an okay kind of like setting things up for the future Justified. It's like, you know, didn't blow me away. It had some nice character moments with Raylan and his daughter. It kind of fleshed out how Carolyn feels about Clement, you know, like she's thinks he's dangerous and wishes she was well shot of him. Yeah, and ends in kind of like, you know, this weird transition thing, because like I do not believe for a minute that we are done with Willa. What did you think?
I like this episode quite a bit. I really enjoyed the new character, Skinder. He's a lot of fun. That dude, I'd probably want to have a drink with him at a bar, too.
Cinder's Lol Garage.
Yeah, Lol Garage. Skinder, Lol Garage, Lol Your Eye.
Yeah.
He was great. I really liked I can't remember. It's been so long since I've seen Justified. I can't remember if this is a thing that Justified did regularly, but the way they're playing with information, who has it, who doesn't, thinks they have it, and who thinks they have enough to say what they're saying, but they're actually tipping their hand or tipping somebody else's hand. That intricate, like, who knows what when stuff is really exciting for me, because there are several moments of that in this episode.
Not only is that a Justified thing, that's very much an Elmore Leonard thing. And
gotcha.
That style, and especially since there's like the people playing the games are all different levels of you know, capability and experience, and there's some, you know, it's always fun to see the people that don't know better and think they know everything and how they act and behave, and the people that do know better. And are aware that they don't know everything and how they act and behave. Because this guy's whole problem is just like he thinks, as he says right in the beginning of the episode, he can do whatever he wants. Like he has convinced himself because of his doo-dah dumb luck that he is untouchable. And it's now not too hard to look around and find real life examples of people like this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and he's, you know, I think he unknowingly made a mistake in the first set of episodes, first two, by killing this judge. He really didn't know what he was doing there. Here, he kind of knows exactly what he's doing with the Albanians. He thinks he's just invincible.
Mm-hmm.
He could literally do whatever he wants. And I guess if you don't care whether you live or die, that's kind of true. Like, sure, do whatever you want, and eventually you'll be killed for it, you know?
Yeah, he just thinks, it's not that he thinks he's immortal, he thinks he's invincible. And I got, you know, a guy who, you know, when he started when Sandy started talking about the Albanians and how seriously they take revenge, and I started feeling like, you know, this is like a Barry situation. Like, you're going to get involved with this hot dog guy, and then pretty soon there's going to be Chechen assassins coming after you, and...
Mm-hmm.
No Ho Hank is going to take it's I don't know. And I also like the in that scene where Clem is like, damn, is this Albania or is this Detroit or Eastern Tennessee? Kind of like showing the shell game the show is playing with is like,
or East Kentucky, you know?
Yeah. Or East Kentucky.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed this episode. And I think this is probably the last we're going to see of Skinder based on the end of this episode, but I kind of hope not, or at least I hope there are as many entertaining Albanians still alive as dead.
I'll posit that I bet he's the least entertaining of the Albanians.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you're right.
Each Albanian more entertaining than the last.
Mm-hmm. The next Albanian will order a hot dog sandwich, which no shame.
That's true. He's not afraid to answer the tough questions facing us today in society.
All right. Well, maybe we should get into the recap. What do you say?
Let's do it.
There ain't nothing in life that comes for free. That's why we had this ad break.
getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Wherever the podcast takes me. Welcome back to the Justified Podcast.
All right, we start off in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. We're really getting a tour of Michigan, huh? Going all over the place.
Keep on a watch for John Cusack.
Wait, what? Should I get this reference?
Haven't you seen Grosse Pointe Blank?
Yes. That's the one where he goes back to high school with Minnie Driver and
he goes
that.
Back to here. This is the high school that he graduated from.
That makes sense.
So it'd be funny in the midst of all the Albanian Clement action if there is Dan Aykroyd and John Cusack having a shootout in the background too.
Yeah. Carolyn gets a tax lien for over $100,000 and she calls Jamal to tell him to deal with it because it's his problem. And then Clement shows up with a busted face, wants to take pictures of it for evidence against Raylan. And she tells him to stay away from her and stay away from the marshal. This setup. We're learning more and more about Carolyn's predicament. And we kind of knew Jamal was a problem in that first episode. But this one really shows how it's affecting her life. You know, she gets his tax lien and then later we see her wanting to apply for associate judge. And she decides not to because there's a question on there about tax liens.
Yeah, I think this was a really interesting development that, you know, you think of like when she meets with Jamal, it's like, oh, he's a bad dude. He's getting her into this or that and the other. But like, it's also like these choices that she's made seemingly out of loyalty to people who did right to her in the past are catching up to her and kind of like preventing her from fully realizing her future. Seems like she's got a very bright future. She's a very capable lawyer. She should be eyeing circuit judge court vacant. It is kind of, there's something ghoulish about her, because I think the idea you're supposed to get is she's trying to slide into Judge Guy's
position.
But yeah, she's ambitious and she's bright and she's capable, but she's being held back by all these entanglements with her husband, with Clem, and it's too bad. And the other thing I got is that she is not in control of this situation. She is afraid of Clem. No. She gives clear boundaries to Clem that he freely ignores to make her feel unsafe and threatened. I felt sorry for her because she's got the whole, she got a tiger by the tail, but that's not an, you know, that's not an enviable position. You know, we say that as like, oh, you got you got the, but like having a tiger by the tail,
one wrong
not a good
move.
Place to be.
And the tiger's gonna bite you, right? Like tigers.
Yeah, you got the ass end all locked down, but what, you got any plans for the teeth and the claws? So.
And she does kind of talk Clem down here sternly, right? She's able to set those boundaries, but you almost feel like it's because Clem is amused by respecting them in some way, right? It's only by his good grace that she's able to send him on his way here.
Yeah, he's like a child. He's like, well, I'll do whatever I want. So if it's what I want is the lie, I want to leave right now. But
right.
I also think that, like, I do wonder what he has over her and her situation that she is so reticent to, you know, I guess betray him. Oh, she's not that really reticent to betray him. She won't do it officially. You know, she won't do it. She won't work with the bar, but she will try to use back channels to take him down. She's excited about Sweetie, you know, having the murder weapon that he could pin on her. But, like, I just feel like she's in a really precarious situation.
Yeah. It probably has something to do with Sweetie, too, because they're all connected, right? So maybe, you know, Clem has some implied threat against Sweetie because he has the gun. Like, everybody thinks they have this gun, except for Sweetie actually has the gun. Mm-hmm. And now none of them know where it is.
Yeah, like, what did he have on people? Because now he's got the judge's book and he doesn't understand it. But clearly that's a big treasure trove of nope that people don't want to get out. But he had that this is something that just fell into his lap. So he had stuff that was backing her off, backing Sweetie off before then. And I don't think it's just the, you know, Sweetie's complicity in the
wrecking,
the
crew
rip and roll
killings.
that Clem did. It's something else.
Okay.
Like I said, that's what Justify likes to do. Like, plays with its cards close to the vest, and we'll see if any cards fall out.
Yeah. All right, we go over to the Detroit police station where Raylan's daughter is not talking to him. The cops are talking, though, about the case. And first time through, I had literally no idea what they're trying to decide to do here. They speak so quickly in such lingo and like and in shorthand. And I'm just like, whatever, guys. Guess I'll wait till the next scene to see what you're trying to do. What they're actually trying to do is decide who to go arrest and and harass, essentially.
Do they have enough? If they do have enough, who should they pick up? Can they make things stick? The answers to all those questions are no. It turns out.
Yeah.
And Brill, of course, there to offer a lot of extra legal options. Uh-huh. You know, just black bagging someone, take him out to a field, cacao.
See if he can fly off a building. Yeah. Mm-hmm, he's got all kinds of ways to.
You think Brill's got the balls to do anything like that?
Yeah. I wouldn't call it balls. I would call it lack of brains.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to, like, oops, accident, you know, to, like, to roughly toss someone's bar. It's another thing to, like, you know, oops, you bumped your head too hard getting into the police cruiser. It's another thing to throw some dude off a roof.
For sure, but I really didn't like that scene of him sicking the dog on the guy last episode. That was malicious and
that's like
very
petty
violent.
Bullying. Petty bullying, actual murder of a dangerous person. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. Raylan takes Willa to get some breakfast, and Willa asks him what's going on. Raylan tells her she was messing with a killer, and she needs to understand that, tries to impress that on her, how dangerous this is, and she just brushes him off. This is another frustrating scene for me with Willa, but they're gonna double back on this scene in the next half of it and make me, like, completely reverse my position on what's going on here.
Oh, see, I'm
because this one, I'm like, oh, fuck, just listen to your dad. He's trying to keep you out of trouble. And then the next part of this, I'm like, okay, I understand where you're coming from.
I think I got most of this. I will say that, like, man, people are having a hard time with the Willa part of this show. A lot of the feedback we got this week, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to read feedback this week because we just had surprise double Justified episode, surprise double Enterprise up, or no, I'm sorry, Enterprise Strange New World episode. I'm just getting caught back up with the recording schedule, and we had an interview to fit, a bunch of bullshit podcasting stuff came up. I'll get to it next week, but I will say that a lot of people are just like, absolutely not with this Willa thing, with Timothy Oliphant's daughter. I feel like Miss Oliphant here, a very good analogy to make is Eddie Furlong. If you don't recall, he was John Connor from Terminator 2.
Oh, yes.
Very young, very green. There's something in the, like, rawness, intensity that James Cameron liked. He cast him, and then everybody's like, oh, great movie, but this kid sucks. I don't think, and I had the podcast on this where I discussed, I don't think Eddie Furlong sucks. I think Eddie Furlong's playing a really good young punk-ass teenager who's bounced from foster home to foster home, thinks his mom's crazy. Having said that, there's probably 30 actors in Hollywood of his age that could have done that role better, that had more experience, more training.
Sure.
But that's, I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, it's entirely possible that we would not be watching the show had Willa not been cast as she'd been cast. So it's like, and I'm also in that person. I don't think she's ruining it. I think she's acting like an awkward kid. But it is very Eddie Furlong. It is sometimes frustrating to watch a very green actor struggle with this, what I think is awesome material, and very sympathetic material. And I just, like, man, I hate seeing feedback where people are like having trouble connecting the show just because of that. But, you know, that's the breaks. Why?
Yeah, it'll happen.
Why spend 6 years making a television show and a character famous if you can't pull some weight for your offspring, you know?
Yeah. Are you saying there's a bit of real life leaking into this? Like, Timothy, Dad, why can't we spend time together? Well, I'm working on this TV show.
Oh, my God.
And I just can't, you know? It's dangerous. The director, he's a wild man. Who knows what will happen if you come to set?
Well, you got a wild Yost coming at you with the clapboard. You don't even know. Yeah,
no, I'm kidding. I have no insight into that, but I see what people are saying. It's not bothering me that much. I will say I notice it for sure. Mm-hmm. But look, it's like less than 10 minutes out of this entire episode. It's like 5 minutes, maybe. I can handle that. And I think there's stuff that she does later in the episode that I think is very good.
Yeah,
I think that scene in the airport is pretty damn good.
But they actually talk about this scene. I like it that, like, it's this. We've talked about that. There's this kind of genre that's essentially like millennial Gen X wish fulfillment, where they can, you know, they have a problem, they talk with their boomer parents, and their boomer parents like come correct and everything. Like the opposite of that. That's like, I don't know. This is a generation, a Zoomer / Alpha frustration with Gen X that thinks they might be a better parent than they actually. Because that's, you know, to Raylan. Yeah, Raylan, are you a good dad? He probably is comparing himself to his father, the Lord of fucking Thunder, or whatever. And he thinks he's probably killing it. He's crashing. You know, it's like, well, I haven't had to bail. She hasn't had to bail me out when she's 15 because I got drunk and disorderly or anything like that. But he is shit kind of. Raylan's a shitty dad. Like, we were kind of questioning that. I think it's 100% fact that he is kind of an absent dad, that, you know, he wants to be there and he'll say he'd be there and like, I'll pick it, but he gets so lost in the sauce of doing this job that, like, you know, oh yeah, I'll pick you up next weekend. Oh, I'll get you next weekend. It's just like he, and she is not even really trying to accuse him. She's not angry. She's trying to explain to him in ways that she's been taught to kind of relate in terms of emotional green zone, blue zone, all that. And he's just not capable of hearing it, probably because a lot of the guilt that he feels.
He hears it. He's just not capable of doing anything about it. Something about him, when the call of duty is on, he answers it every single time, right?
Yeah.
And always at her expense is what I'm getting. So,
and the expectation is like, well, you're kind of an asshole if you say something, because I got such an important job that is protecting so many important people. And that is kind of true. And that's why it's so insidious, because like Willa knows that. But like, honestly, the 100th time it happens, you're kind of the asshole for not rearranging. Like, you know, like Willa said, if it was important for me to be with you, you would have made arrangements that would have kept me safe.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back and that first episode, if he'd just been to his chief and been like, look, I promised my daughter, I understand the judge requests me personally, and this might be bad for my career or whatever, but I'm out of here. I put in my vacation request. Fuck off. I don't care. And you know what? I bet Mo and Brill solve the crime eventually. That's the tragedy, is like, I'm betting that you do not need Raylan Givens to catch this guy.
Sure.
But he's going to harm.
Maureen could do it, right?
Yeah. That's a character weakness. If you think that you're the only person that can do a job, you can't trust your coworkers to get it done.
Yeah.
You're probably an asshole. But that's a consistent character point. Like, Raylan's not his coworkers don't like him. His bosses don't like him. He's a massive pain in the ass. He's super cool to watch, but I would hate to be his wife, his daughter, his son, his boss, his partner, right?
Sure.
So I don't know. Yeah. I like it. It feels like this season is like the chickens coming home to roost for Raylan.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Sandy gets arrested at work by Wendell. They also search Sweetie's for the gun and the Albanian suite for the diary that Clement took off the judge. And he's also arrested. All of them are arrested.
Oh man, them busting up Sweetie's place.
Tragic, right?
And see Sweetie walk in, and the pain on his face when he sees like them. You know, this is, well, like his partner says later, this is just a shame. It's a waste. And it's punitive, right? That's the thing what these cops are doing.
The thing about it, how do they, because they don't treat the Albanian suite the way that they treat Sweetie's bar.
Well, they're not there to look for anything, but to just,
no, they are, know. They're looking for that diary.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, because later they say we didn't get the diary.
Is that because Detective Bunk, it's not Bunk, but no, what is it, Wendell. Thompson? Wendell.
Oh, I don't know his last name.
Is that because Wendell's running it and he's more professional, but you got Brill sacking Sweeney's place? I felt really bad for Sweeney. I felt really bad for Sandy because, you know, she's there trying to do her job. She's got some dude calling over there to blow his dice all the time. I don't know what the etiquette on that, on having cocktail girls blow on your dice.
I feel like, I don't know. It's probably up to the individual server.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some would probably,
I'm not the type of guy that would do that.
As long as you're tipping.
Like, yeah, I would assume where I won, if you tip it, that you probably could get a person to blow on your dice for luck. I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe he's being a super creep, but like, clearly she hates this job. Her boss is a dick. She gets arrested and her boss is right there in her face like, oh, I knew this was going to happen. Oh, Sandy. Oh, it's like, oh, God, just the worst.
I get the feeling that there's an implication with blowing on the dice, like the Frank Sinatra song, right? He's talking about the woman that he came to the casino with, and you know it's all a veiled metaphor. But
I don't like the way you said came, Jim.
The woman he arrived at the casino with arrived. Mm-hmm. Nope, that's still too sexual.
Yep. See.
Entered.
You can't launder this anecdote. Frank Sinatra, get out of here.
But you know what I'm saying? He shows up at the casino with this woman who he's clearly got a relationship with. It's not like he's having the waiters blow on his dice. It's the woman that's supposed to be with him.
That's customary. And so having, you got a gal Friday for that kind of thing.
Sure, sure. But then having the waiter do it for you, that seems like there's an implication there because of that song, right?
Is there also an implication that this guy is a loser? Like she would gladly blow... garage, Jowl garage or whatever.
Lol garage.
Lol garage has got a dice, but like this guy's got like no prospects. He works second shift at Best Buy or something, and she's like, no.
Yeah, I think so. But what are you gonna do? Then Willa tries to get her dad, this is the second half of that scene, tries to get her dad to admit that this case would be a lot easier if she weren't around, and Raylan kind of, you know, gets what she's putting down and promises to do better. And she says, don't you go backstabbing me.
Apparently, that bitch in Florida backstabbed her and got her nose broke.
Yeah, she's pushing boundaries here left and right. You know, she's cursing right in front of her dad. You know, she says bitch and fuck in the same scene. And I get the impression that it surprises Raylan that this is not something he's used to. And I don't know if this is just a boundary pushing thing or trying to get his attention.
No,
to say, this is serious.
I think that a lot of times kids acting out is attempts to get attention from their parents or to let them to get their parents to take something seriously. And it's like
I've done that for sure,
and I hate to say it, but sometimes it's really inconvenient the way your children have problems sometimes. Like,
sure,
you know it's not often like when you feel like, oh, work is going great, I'm in top tier physical health, I'm getting a full night of rest, and oh, my teenager is deciding to get in some legal trouble, or they're going to decide to experiment with their... It's like, it's never, it's always like, you know, it's like, oh God, another... But like, that's the last thing you want to bring, that energy. Like, oh my God, the last thing I need right now is you fucking shit up, right? But that's what Willa's got, apparently for a large part of her life, growing up with Raylan. That she is just inconvenient. That line where he's like, I wish you would just say it, that I get in your way and it'd be easier if I'm not around. And he goes...
Which is technically true for his job, but also...
When he says, do you know what it's like to hear that? And she's like, do you know what it's like to ask? Like, God damn.
Mm-hmm.
Devastating.
And to Raylan's credit, that gives him pause, right? He doesn't give her another smooth line to kind of brush this all off. I feel like he's taking this stuff to heart. It's just, what can Raylan Givens do about this?
Well, the sad thing is, by the end of this episode, his best solution is to foist her daughter and make it Winona's problem.
Uh-huh.
So there's another long line of betrayal, another notch on Winona's belt. It's another time Raylan's fucked me over. It's just sad. So, and I think he might be right. The best he can do is get her the hell away from this situation. But damn, that's sad.
Yeah, and you wonder, like, maybe he should get himself the hell away from this situation too, right?
And like, and the clear implication, the other thing, is like, all these things are unsaid, and Raylan's like tack is essentially like, I don't like it when you bring up these obvious things because now it makes me feel bad. Why can't you just see that there's nothing that I can do about this and not feel any way particular? You should still love me as a dad, give me free hugs, no matter how many times I let you down, because like my job is so important. And why can't you just get that? Like, that's such a shitty thing to
absolve me of all my guilt.
Yeah, it's just a really shitty thing to do to a kid.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough because I like, you didn't have this kind of baggage in the original Justified series. And so it was
he
lot
did.
More fun.
He was just fucking over Ava and fucking over Winona. And, you know, it's like he's, yeah.
But they were adults. But like, there's something different about like when they can walk away from him without, you know, any real consequence. This is his daughter. It's a whole nother level, and it's kind of sad to see. It was a lot more fun to watch him do this shit in Justify than it is in City Primeval, because he was hurting, I guess, people with more agency.
Why you don't usually have you don't usually saddle action heroes with kids. Like mm-hmm. you might kill a kid to incite them to action, but you don't usually have them like
sure.
babysitting, you know?
Yeah, it's no fun. All right, douche cop interrogates Clement. Wendell interrogates Sandy, and Maureen interrogates Sweetie. All of these cops are lying through their teeth, trying to get one of them to give something up. Clement claims he's going to sing. He asks for a tape recorder, and when he gets it, he does just that. He sings a song to Raylan through the one-way mirror.
Yeah, another White Stripes. It's the thing is like I've already decided this guy's a fucking scumbag, and I'm not. But like I'm like kind of rolling my eyes when he starts singing. But by the time he's getting to the window and he's licking it and rubbing his nose on it, I'm like kind of laughing, but bite myself. Because he
so is Raylan, right? Like Raylan's there uh-huh. with a grin mm-hmm. on his face, thinking this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He knows he's going to be a problem, but he also he's kind of entertained by him.
Yeah. No, they don't have. I mean, the whole at the end of this is like you just realize that they've got nothing, and they were hoping, and it's probably mm-hmm. pretty good hope that one of these perps would suspected perps would make a mistake and. Buy the bullshit and talk to him, and they didn't.
That's the thing. And they're not only are they not getting the information they want out of anybody, but they're giving away information that these guys don't have. Like Douche Cop tells Clement that Sandy goes to Sweetie's after the bridge. He didn't know that. Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, they don't know that. They haven't found uh-huh. the gun. That's just, like, that could get Sandy killed.
Yep. And they tell, an idiot. They tell Sweetie Sandy just gave us the gun, when, in fact, she couldn't because she didn't have the gun. Sweetie had it all right. along. So,
and that's probably, I think, if...
He knows they don't have anything.
I think if you really deconstruct the dialogue, that there is something the cops say that clicks with each individual one of them that lets them know that they're not. And that's one for Sweet. I don't know what the others were.
I don't know what the like, Sandy one is. Because with Clement, it's the fact that she went to Sweetie's after the bridge, which he did not tell her to do, right?
Yeah.
And then he asked later about the gun. So what'd you do with the gun? You know?
Uh-huh.
So I clicked for him, but I don't know what like, Sandy's is.
Detective Robinson. I feel like maybe he's the only one that didn't fuck up because he was like really careful. In fact, he was right on when he's talking to Sandy. He's like, you know, you had that squeezed out look. Mm-hmm. You had it the night at the casino. You had it that standing at the bridge. You had it going into Sweetie's, but when you're walking out, you didn't have that look. So like,
so something happened in Sweetie's.
Yeah, and I think that's just like they're trying to show you which people are good at the job and which people are kind of shit at the job. And guess what, Brill kind of shit at
the job. That's weird because I didn't really expect Maureen to be bad at the job. And she's not what she...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know that it's true that they each say something that fucks up the investigation. It might just be Brill, but...
Yeah, I mean, Brill's giving info away. Maureen's just overplaying her hand, saying Sandy gave us the gun. He knows that she can't give him the gun.
Right.
Or that if she did give him the location of the gun, it won't be there when they go to look for it.
Right.
Anyway, Raylan tells the chief what happened, and he's not happy. Willa talks up her dad to Carolyn before Raylan pulls Carolyn aside and tells her to stop defending Clement because he's a murderer. She says, yeah, well, if he's a murderer, go prove it. Do some police work.
And, you know, the whole thing, because he's getting riled up, he's like, she grabs him. It's like, look, not everyone gets to be angry like you. Not everyone just gets to go and kill, like, invent legally justified reasons to murder people, right?
All right, there are three reasons this could be. A, he's white. B, he's a marshal. C, he's Raylan fucking Givens. Which do you think she's referring to? All of them?
They're all three, like Spartan warriors overlapping each other with shields, you know?
They're impenetrable.
Just one alone strong, probably doesn't get the job done. All three of those, there's no fucking way.
Yeah.
But this is like, it's funny because like these are, it seems like the first three episodes of this season are deconstructing the Raylan mythos. Uh-huh. Like the other, like giving a voice to the other side of like why he is so, why he's so much fun for us to watch, but he's so infuriating for the people around him.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
And also, like, the other thing that makes Raylan not completely hateable is that he feels kind of put upon too, because his boss is like, Raylan, you're fucking all this shit up. He's like,
Send me home.
I didn't want to be here. Send me home. Oh, you want me to send to Elliot? Well, then keep me here. Like, what the fuck?
Right.
Like, you
just, what are we having this conversation for? Just do what you're gonna do, and I'll do what I'm gonna do. All right.
He's like one of those dogs that, like, you know, are in the cage with the electrified floor, the learned helplessness. Like, haven't you seen an experiment where they did the, you know, like, they shocked the floor of the dog when a light comes on, so the dog starts like getting on a platform, and I can't remember exactly, but then there's some dogs that they just shock, just, you know, intermittently for no fucking reason, and eventually those dogs would stop trying to get away from the shock. They call it learned helplessness. Like, you taught the dog that there's nothing they can do to improve their situation in life. I felt horrible. Like in this scene, Raylan felt like that trapped dog, where it's like, I can't, there's nothing I can do to improve my life. I can't let this murderer go free. I can't let my daughter down. My fucking supervisor is screaming at me. My partners are yelling at me. The defender, the public defender's pissed at everybody.
Mm-hmm. Did we see this in the first two episodes where they were at the restaurant, and I knew Willa ordered her dad the most ridiculous drink on the menu, but I didn't realize she ordered one for Carolyn. Did we see that, or is this, like, new info?
Yeah, no. Okay, she ordered the drink, and that's the big sparkler concoction that came to her at the bar.
Oh, I thought it came
episode.
To Raylan, and that's why they left.
No. It went to Willa Carolyn. Ordered it for her on Raylan's behalf.
Jesus Christ, kid. Come on.
I like Carolyn. She's really sweet about how she handled that. You know, like, oh, Spark was a nice touch, you know?
Yeah. Also, he's pretty fly for a white guy.
Yeah, he's all right for a white
come
guy.
Come on, man.
Oh, is that what his 15-year-old white daughter is saying? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, Raylan's staying at Marine and Bill's house. He sees his daughter enjoying the company of their daughters. And then he's thinking about the case, and it's not sitting right with him that Clement isn't connected in any way to this judge, and that Clement isn't jealous of the Albanian who Sandy spent the night with. It's all a bit strange in his mind.
And it is, like, Raylan's pondering a question that has no satisfying answer, because the answer is it's all random chance.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the Albanian stuff, he's on to something here, because they do have a plan around that, but the judge stuff...
True.
Yeah, it's not connected in any way.
Yeah, but he's looking for how they connect, and they're just never gonna.
And then, you know, the stuff where he's watching his daughter play with the other daughter, this is gonna come back again when he goes to say goodbye to her as she's sleeping, but this is kind of the life that he knows that she could have with him if they were more of a family unit, or if he were less of a Marshall. Yeah, it's sad, because this is what he wants her to have all the time, but she doesn't.
It's funny when Mo said, oh, look at the Marshall doing police work, it gave me pause, because I realized, like, Raylan doesn't really do a lot of detective work. This is Raylan's detective work. I'm looking for a guy. All right, I'm gonna go down to the corner store. Where's this guy? All right, I'm gonna go to a trailer. Where's this guy? I'm gonna go to the whorehouse, local whorehouse. Where's this guy? And eventually he finds the guy, but he doesn't, like, pick up shell casings and do soil samples and dust for fingerprints. Yeah. He just rolls around asking where is his goddamn guy until he finds him.
Uh-huh. Applying leverage, sometimes physical leverage, you know.
So maybe we'll actually see him Batman some shit here. I don't know. Do some detective work.
We'll see. All right. Sweetie cleans up the wreckage of his bar with one of his employees. Turned out he grabbed Clement's gun and hid it from the cops, and he puts it behind the jukebox instead of the ceiling, hoping that Clement won't have access to it when he's in a bind and he'll get killed, get got.
Is this his employee, or is this his partner? Like, long-term romantic partner? Because I definitely got a little bit of Sparks. Like, they're having, like, you know, obviously they're mad at each other at the beginning. Uh-huh. But when, like, Sweeney pulls out that pistol, and the way I felt like there was something intimately familiar in the way they were interacting.
Huh. Could be. Yeah.
I could be way off, but like
I just assumed who would be here helping him sweep up, probably an employee, but yeah, you could be right.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you can have intimate relations with your employee. That came out wrong. You can be like, yeah, you and I.
It's not advised. Yeah,
I mean, not physical, but we're you know, we're more than just colleagues, employees here.
Sure. I gotta wonder. So Sweetie doesn't really know what he's doing here either, right? Like, well, he does. So he says he's gonna take away Clement's ace in the hole by hiding this gun somewhere else. But really, he's taking away Sandy's ace in the hole primarily, right? Because she hid it there. Clement doesn't even know it's here.
Clement thinks it's...
He thinks it's in the river.
Yeah.
Sandy thinks it's here. So Sandy's going to be the one who needs this ace in the hole and isn't going to find it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, again, classic Leonard plotting.
But Sweetie knows that, right? But Sweetie also probably thinks that Clement told Sandy to come hide it here.
That's exactly right.
So he thinks that Clement knows it's here. Clement doesn't know it's here. Sandy knows it's here. She's going to need it. But he thinks that Clement's going to need it. It's kind of brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a cop insurance? Because I think Sweetie should get some. Like, can this man afford to just rebuild his entire fucking bar? To buy new furniture that they sliced open?
Buy all new stock? It's my understanding that the city is going to have to make him whole. Since they didn't find anything.
Two years from now, after he's closed up shop and can't get a liquor license again?
I've heard, depending on the department and the municipality and all that, that like that can be a very hollow...
Yeah.
You know... That could be a very hollow promise, but and also you're missing, yeah, like if it, let's say it takes them 6 months to go and fix everything, like what do you do, stay closed for 6 months?
Right. Zero income, have to close the bar, lose your liquor license, you can't get it back because somebody else has bought it. Like,
right. And it sounded like he had some kind of sweetheart, like off the books relative kind of deals where like he like literally might not be able to get a liquor license again ever.
Yeah, no, this kind of shit can ruin people's lives. That's what I mean. Like, you need insurance. Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Like, it's and the poorer you are, the worse it gets. Like, I've heard so many stories of people whose lives you can trace back their being homeless to a $250 traffic ticket that they just couldn't afford.
Uh-huh. And then, or even just getting stopped and hassled and not ticketed. And just caused delay in their schedule where they were supposed to get to a job interview or get to work and they were late and got fired.
And it's, yeah.
Yeah. There's stuff in what's the latest HBO?
We Own the City?
Yeah, there's stuff in We Own the City about that, right? One of the characters in that got hassled, lost his job, all that.
It doesn't take much. I mean, you know, people live on razor margins, and it doesn't take much to turn a taxpayer into a quote unquote drain on the system. I think there's improvements that could be made in the American justice system.
Of course.
I think
there's some
tweaks.
Yes.
Some minor things we could do here and there to make it more humane and just. But.
And then I contrast that with Carolyn, what's going on with her. And she has a $100,000 tax lien. It's a massive bill, which I get the impression she could probably just afford to pay.
Ooh, but I don't know about how many of those and how many.
Right, yeah, right. How far is she going to let Jamal push it?
That's just a that's just to back taxes. Like, what other debts? And who else do they owe money to? You know,
sure. And you know, if she does pay it, what license does that give Jamal to just continue his behavior? Right, rack up another $100,000 tax debt. It's not going to go away just because she pays it. But she probably could. I mean, this is a very nice house she's living in. So you've got that other end of the spectrum where it's like it's holding her back in her career, but it's not threatening to destroy her life. At least not yet.
I wouldn't think $100,000 with her like in, but that $100,000 is a lot for a defense attorney, I would think, you know. It'd be a lot for a federal judge. You know, you have to be multiple millionaire, you know, tens of millions of dollars before the $100,000 starts becoming whatever.
I saw where she lived, and I'm looking at these going, I don't know if this is all just salary.
Right. I definitely
that
got
book floating around.
I definitely got that opinion that, yeah, I mean, they're telling us multiple ways that at least Judge mm-hmm. Guy's dirty. She's dirty, too.
Yeah. Jamal's got something on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Everybody seems to be in a bind here. So Clement wakes up feeling better, and he wants to have sex with Sandy. She won't do it unless he brushes his teeth, which he won't do. Okay, dude, sure. He asks Sandy what she did with the gun. She says she threw it in the river, and she tries to toast her bagel, but Clement won't let her. Hmm, that's weird.
Oh, because the book is in the bagel.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was like, what the fuck is... But why is he... Why doesn't he just... I don't get Clem. Because to me, if Clem pulled this shit the first time he's changed his... the first time he turns his back, I'm getting in that toaster and figuring out what the fuck is in there.
Right.
But Sandy already knows it's about so the weird. Book. So, like, why is he being this way?
Maybe he's trying to let her think the cops got it?
Could be that she doesn't trust him because the doesn't trust her anymore because of the gun question, and until he knows he can trust her, he's being. But like, yeah. This is you got to move the book, dude. Once you make this giant deal over your girlfriend mm-hmm. not being able to toast her fucking bagel, you know, you can't leave it in the bagel machine because she knows something's there.
And where is he gonna hide it? His tidy whiteys? I mean, come on, the guy doesn't wear clothes.
Do you think Clem even enjoys sex, or is it something he does just to control Sandy?
It can be both.
I suppose. Maybe he enjoys the fact that he controls Sandy through yeah. the sex.
Yeah, it might be a power thing for him.
Because that's what it does. Like, I never get to, like, do you even like fucking bro? Or do you... What is this, like, some kind of 3D chess you're playing all the time? Like, mm-hmm. what the...
And then he asks about the Albanian, and she tells him about all the blood feuds that happen between families and the secret panic rooms they have.
Yeah.
You know what? I was kind of surprised that they're even still staying at the Albanian's suite. Like, the cops are just letting them stay there. They don't really have any right to be there.
Well, they don't have any. They also don't have a right to kick them out. I wonder if the cops have made an attempt to contact Dell. Do you think Clem's has killed him?
This is not the Albanians. Wait.
No,
I'm very confused. Skinner
this
is
the guy.
Albanian.
So this is the guy that's got the crypt. This is the crypto millionaire.
This is crypto
that staying
guy.
With.
Okay.
The Lal Garage is this their latest casino.
He's
mark.
The mark. Uh-huh.
But I wonder if this, especially if he stays gone, the longer he stays gone, the more I wonder if like Clem just murdered him. Didn't tell Sandy.
It's possible. Yeah. He could do whatever he wants.
Obvious implication. The obvious analogy that they're making here is to the Hatfield and McCoys. You know, these ancient blood feuds and mm-hmm. these hillbilly feuds that they get into. And they're, you know, again, trying to paint Detroit with the Harlan brush.
Yep. And I think it's working pretty well. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing how the Albanians react to this episode.
Yeah.
Quick scene here. Raylan says goodbye to Willa as she sleeps. And then we go over to Carolyn, who wants to apply for the office of associate judge, but she's reluctant to answer the question about tax liens. And instead, she goes into an empty courtroom and sits in the judge's chair just for a thrill, for a little bit of wish fulfillment here. Yeah.
Is it just me, or does the music on this show kind of suck? Like, all the music they're playing is everyone's being contemplative here. Like, it just feels very much like primetime network crime drama. The kind of shit that they made fun of on Saving Sarah, or Forgetting Sarah Marshall. You know, how that guy's like, oh, I just play ominous chords. I just play
melody.
With, like, I'm just... Burr, burr, pfft. That's what this... Yeah. It feels extremely lazy. And I don't... I've only noticed it in these kind of dramatic things, but, like... It's pretty paint by numbers, it feels.
I agree. And it's hard to match up to the original theme song from Justified. That's mm-hmm. that's a banger. This one doesn't quite compare. And it's a lot shorter, right? They're not trying to do that long, drawn-out intro. So even the theme song is not quite as good. But
yeah.
What are you going to do? We got to get out of this town alive. We'll be right back.
it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa. Starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role, and the mighty Thor, Chris Hemsworth, as the warlord, Dr. Dementis, Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com.
I just poured a fresh shot of bourbon. We're back with more Justified. Raylan goes to the hot dog stand where Skinder works. Skinder Lolurai Lolgaraj claims that he's marrying Sandy, but she wants him to meet her brother first, and it's obvious that he's Sandy and Clement's mark to Raylan.
Yeah. We are apple cut in half.
They're one in the same, right?
They're two halves of the same. Yeah, they're not just they're one. They're meant to be. And his whole like, you know, when I came to this country, I thought everything PlayStation and big butts, but then I meet I'm like, dude, she's literally PlayStation and big butt. Like, come on. Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah,
buying her $30,000 ring. You're gonna propose to her. You just gotta meet her brother that she's unusually close to. Like this guy, how did he make $1 million in hot dogs?
I don't know, man. I guess you don't have to be a genius to. There's always money in the hot dog stand, as they say.
What was it, Tyrannodogus or Dogosaur? I forget the name of his. It was some kind of dinosaur dog. Tyrannodog, right?
Yeah, it's not a good name.
No, but I did kind of want to get a couple hot dogs from there. I bet those hot dogs are fire.
Sure. I can go for a good hot dog. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Tyrannodog's probably got some decent ones.
Yeah, because I feel like with hot dogs, because we got an upscale hot dog place in this city. Mm-hmm. You don't get hot dogs there. you don't pay $15 for a hot dog.
They're expensive.
You go up to like, what is it? Daddy Frank's in Columbus. I forget the Dirty Frank's in Columbus where you're paying like $4.50 a dog. That's where you go. Yeah. That's where you go. They'll throw chili on there, throw Cheetos on there, anything, improbable combinations mm-hmm. of things they'll put on hot dogs.
And or just it looks go to Costco. Like, pick up a
it looks like
there.
A bombed out hole in the wall. Senate looks like a Michelin restaurant. And that's who wants a three Michelin star hot dog?
They have craft cocktails at what should be a hot dog stand. Hot dogs are not fancy food. Let's not pretend here.
There's not even a drop of rat shit in those Senate hot dogs. And you can taste it. You can taste the difference. You can taste the distinct lack of lip and asshole in the meat.
Wrong.
And it's just not as good. It's not what I'm looking for. I'm not there for Wagyu beef. I'm there for a hot dog. God damn.
Not there for the polished floors. Stop polishing that floor, man. Don't worry about it. Just get the dogs out the door.
It's funny because this whole episode, I'm looking for the Polish joke. And I feel like they keep on like hinting that they're going to make it. But they're like, nah, I'm not going to do it. Brill has a good one later on, too.
Yeah, right. All right. Sandy and Clement meet with Skinder at a bar. Clement tells a story about his mama being carried away by a tornado, which is a weird cutaway. I don't know what the show's doing here. It's really strange.
Is it true?
No, definitely.
You don't think
not.
So?
Definitely
not even a little
not.
Bit.
No.
Why cut away to the fucking intro to Twister? I don't understand.
Even if it is true, why cut away? Just tell the story. You don't have to cut to a scene of them showing a Twister sucking their mom away.
I don't like the way you said sucking their mom away.
Entering their mom? Is that better?
I think...
Damn you, Frank Sinatra.
I think, yeah. Famous blower of moms. I think there's going to be something to this story, and it's going to come out like in the penultimate episode.
Okay. Yeah, I mean...
Gonna be some good
we'll
old
see.
Twister. It's gonna be some storm cellar act. Something's gonna pivot around Sandy surviving. Because he's the whole fucking story is false. They're not even related. They're not brother and sister.
And I want to say this is a panic room illusion. This is a warm up to the panic room discussion. Because where do you go when the Twister comes?
He is The whole fiction is that he's trying to make sure his little sister is provided for. Our family got wiped out by lack of...
We wish we had a bunker to go to, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then
when
they get
the big one
business.
Comes through, Law Garage, where are you going to take my little sister? Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah I was
he's
a fool.
Trying to find out where he keeps his cash.
I way overthought that.
Yeah. Well, he pulled your shit. I mean...
He pulled my shit.
He pulled your shit.
100%.
God, Law Garage is so funny, man.
He is.
You're pulling my shit. so good. Anyway, Maureen and Raylan are staking out this bar where they're meeting. And Maureen's talking about her dreams with Raylan and how she can't sleep. And when she does, she's just dreaming of Magic Mike, I guess, who turns out to be her husband and her daughters. And he asks how she's keeping her work and family life going so well. And she says, just pretend. And the douche cop and Wendell show up to relieve him.
It's funny because, like, you mentioned Raylan being disturbed about his daughter swearing and not saying anything about it. I think it's interesting that the first thing he says to Mo is, like, do you realize you swear a lot? I think that shows that it is something that bothers him.
He's thinking about it, yeah.
But also, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if Willa turned out like Mo, because he clearly likes Mo, like he admires her.
Yeah, I think so. He's looking for life advice from her, so yeah, he thinks she's got something going on.
She's just how crushing. It's like, you and Bill seem like you got it all. How do you make the domestic bliss thing work out? You just fake it till you make it. You just pretend.
Yeah, we really don't. I guess Leo's. The law enforcement officers just kind of have to live that way because their jobs are demanding.
Yeah, it does seem if you're murder police, maybe you should just be a loner.
Yeah, probably for the best.
If I've learned anything with watching cop shows, it's just all alcoholism and broken marriages. You might as well just,
yep,
you know.
All right, Sweetie gives Carolyn a hypothetical situation where he has the gun that killed the judge and five other people in the Wrecking Crew killings. She tells him in that scenario, you should turn it in and that I could get you a guarantee of immunity, and he tells her to look into it.
Something tells me that guaranteed immunity is going to be problematic. Not going to be as easy as everybody's thinking it's going to be.
I think so. Question is, will he know that? Will that be made obvious to him, or will that kind of be hidden to get him turn it in? I don't know. Or he might never get the chance, right? Like, that's the thing. If the guaranteed immunity is on the table, then something horrible will probably happen to him, where he either can't turn in the gun because he doesn't have it now, or he'll get killed for it, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Raylan packs up Willa's bags and tells her that she's leaving so he can do his job without putting her in more danger. She is less than thrilled with that. He tries to give her that emblem, that the Pontiac emblem that she found, but she doesn't want it.
Ooh, Chekhov's emblem's now with Raylan. Is Raylan going to stab somebody?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, that's it's pretty rough stuff. Well, I guess we don't actually get to where she's crying and pleading with him yet. This is not that scene.
Yeah, so what I don't like here is how she seems to think that he can do his job and be with her and keep her safe. I don't think that's really a possibility, is the problem. This is how he's trying to keep you safe, by sending you away. Now, it's absolutely on the table that he should maybe not be taking these cases, maybe back off a little from the dangerous stuff so that he can be with you more. But I don't think he should keep you in this situation. And she really doesn't see that. She's like, oh, if you wanted me here, you'd find a way to keep me safe. No, that's what he's doing here.
Well, but like, I think that's literally true. If you wanted me here bad enough, you would find a way to keep me safe, even if that means taking your fucking vacation, even if that means going to Glencoe like you always promised mom to be an instructor so you're not doing this dangerous shit. Maybe, like, when she says, I can't do my job and take care of you, mom does. She's not an idiot. She doesn't think that, like, oh, Willa's doing her administrative work at a real estate office or whatever the hell she's doing. She's saying there are jobs that people can take to provide for their children and their families that don't involve this immense danger that you can't be with them. But like,
I didn't feel like that's what she was saying. I feel like that is the solution.
Don't do
the marshalling stuff. I think she's saying in this moment, like, I want to stay here with you. Don't send me away. Find a way to keep me safe in this situation. And I think that's a terrible idea.
So you don't think Raylan could? Because, like I said, I think there's like three different things Raylan could do.
So what you're saying is you think she's literally asking him to quit this case and go with her back to Florida or whatever.
Yeah. To keep his promise. The multiple promises he's made.
I suppose.
Before the show began and during the show. Yeah, I think that's what she's wanting him to do. And I don't think it's a big impression
that she wanted him to, you know, he's obviously going to continue working on this case. And what she was asking is, figure out a way to keep me safe while you work on this case. Oh, and that is just impossible. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that sounded really dumb. But I guess, if she's saying, stop working on this case and just come be with me, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, also, she's not trying it seems like she's pretty emotionally sophisticated with the whole green zone, blue zone, yellow zone, red zone talk, and the fact that, you know, that's it's a pretty strong relational negotiating tactic to not do the work for the other person, to be like, I don't know what the solution is here. I just know that if I was important to you, I would not be the C, D, E, F priority in every fucking situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, you know, I most 15-year-olds in this position would be like, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? Why? And then that gives Raylan a position like, oh, you dumb kid. That's won't
Here's
work because
I
this,
can't.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
But all you, if you just go with like your emotional truth, which is like, I just know I'm not as important to you as this job. And I wish you would stop pretending otherwise. He's got nothing for that. And I think that was a pretty sophisticated thing for her.
Obvious by his actions, right? Like,
yeah.
Every
yeah.
time he's supposed to be with her being a parent, he's taking a phone call for this case or off
and
doing
these,
something else.
These scenes are great because almost every single one is interrupted by his fucking phone frantically going off by multiple people trying to, you know, and he tries to, you know, snooze one and dismiss the, and they just keep coming. So it's like.
And at the end, he gives in and he takes the call, right? Like,
yeah, and he can't even break up with his daughter in peace, which is essentially what he's doing.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's interesting, like earlier in this episode, he does kind of try, but it's on his terms. It's weird because like she says, oh, yeah, you know, I'm hungry. I want to go to breakfast with my dad.
I don't want
to cope.
I don't
want to
go
out.
Machine. Yeah.
And they're about to go out and do a bunch of arrests and a bunch
of
interrogations and stuff. And he misses that intentionally. He's like, yes, I need to be here with my daughter for this. But that's kind of the boring part that Raylan doesn't care to do, right? Like bringing the perps in when they already know where they are. They already know what they're looking for. All that stuff is kind of what's boring to him. So he's not making a huge sacrifice there. It's kind of, I'll just miss the boring stuff. And then as soon as there's, you know, more information or a new lead or something that he needs to track down, he's all about that. And he's sacrificing his daughter to do it.
I could see that.
So Clement and Sandy get Skinder super drunk. He proposes to Sandy, asks for Clement's blessing, but Clement won't give it until he sees the secret room. So Skinder agrees to take him to the room, and they get in their car. Douche Cop and Wendell follow them. And Clement spots the tail and gives him the slip, causing them to wreck in the process.
It's such a smart criminal move. Like, you suspect you're being tailed, so you just wait at the light. And then everybody, of course, like, the extra touch is everybody getting pissed off and going around them because this is Detroit.
And
then suddenly Brill and Wendell are there, like, and Brill's like, get down. He's like, I'm 6'5". I can't get down. Like, what do you want me to do? Big brain on Clem. That's a A+ move to break.
Yeah, he's
tail.
No dummy for sure. Like, you know, Douche Cop might think he's dumb. I think he's not a criminal mastermind, but he's smarter than he looks, for sure.
He's smarter than he looks. He's not as smart as he thinks he is.
Yes.
No one is that smart. True. Lex fucking Luthor isn't as smart as he thinks he is, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are people who are exactly as smart as they think they are. In all directions, right?
Isn't that Dunning-Kruger effect kind of a guarantee you can't? Like, if you're smart, you think you're stupid. And if you're stupid, you think you're smart. So it's like... Maybe
the person
who's 100 IQ
center.
People,
yeah.
They're the real masters. They're the
absolute mean and knows exactly how smart they are.
Perfectly balanced as all things should be. I know exactly how dumbass I am.
Clement arrives at Skinder's building, finally, and Skinder takes them to the room. Clement asks what's in the safe inside of the room. So Skinder opens it, shows him his gun collection. They're all loaded, by the way. Because what good is an unloaded gun? Clement is angrily disappointed and puts the gun on Skinder, saying he wants to see the cash. Second time he's been stymied by Venmo. I love it. This dude doesn't keep cash. He keeps it all in Venmo, bro. So good. And that really,
yeah, and
that's
also
what
this
pisses Clem off, right? He's like,
well, because this is the his bedrock principle. Foreigners, immigrants, they don't trust banks. The fact that this guy's doing Venmo is kind of like the show saying that Clem's old days of ripping, rolling people on cash is just done.
Yeah, he's outmoded, man. You can't steal
anecdotally,
the money into Venmo.
Anecdotally, you know, drugs in Ohio, the ones that I like, have been legal for, if you get carded and everything, for quite some time. But before then, the last few dealers I've had do business with Venmo and pay and that was insane to me. But that was like a decade ago. People were starting to do like, oh yeah, just fucking Zell me or whatever. Just pay me.
You know, get the paper trail app and send me money through there.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, if your fucking weed dealers and your Albanian hot dog guys aren't keeping cash in the mattresses, and what the fuck?
Right? Yeah, you're done. I also love Skinder being so excited about having music for the women
in his sexy panic room.
Sexy panic room. So good.
Well, I tell you what, I feel like Clem's whole, and I guess that, you know, Law Garage is just heroically drunk, but like Clem's entire effect the entire time is like, I'm going to rob you and I'm here for that reason only.
Yep.
And this guy just keeps on going past the flashing red lights. And let me ask you this. Why does Clem ask him if he can still close the door? I was trying to think, like,
I want to say he doesn't want to get trapped in there. No, it doesn't make sense. I really don't know.
I'm trying to think.
Because he puts the gun on him when he goes for the button. Is it like a... it wouldn't be a call the cops panic button. That doesn't make any sense in that scenario, right?
No, is it call his Albanian like he's brothers going to trap him in here? I just think that Clem would kill this guy if he wants to kill this guy.
Yeah, and there's obviously a way to get out. You can't really trap him in here, right?
I wouldn't think
so. A panic room that you can't get out of.
Yeah, I was a little confused about maybe he just wanted him to turn his back so he could put the gun on him.
Maybe I
and he knew it's like, hey, like, you know, the guy would turn because he's so drunk he's not thinking he'd turn, but like
sometimes this show can be so subtle in what it's doing and move so quickly that I kind of don't move with it.
That's fine. I imagine that this will all make sense by next week.
Oh,
if
yeah.
there's something, like I said, it could just be that he wanted him to turn his back so he could pull the gun on him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Always hard to pull a gun on right in someone's face, you know.
I think Clem could do it. I don't think he's got any problems with that.
Yeah, I don't think Law Garage has got enough neurons firing to come up with a...
No.
His only defense against Clem is, come on, bro! I mean, that's his...
I think you need to get the fuck out, yeah. And then finally, Raylan escorts Willa to the plane. She pleads with him not to send her home, but when Raylan gets a work call about Skinder's place, she boards the plane without saying goodbye.
With tears in her eyes, begs her father not to send her away. I'll even
She's
go
very
to
good
Graceland
in this scene.
With you, Dad.
I really like her in this scene.
Yeah,
say
I
say what
suspect.
You want about some others, but she kind of nails this one.
I suspect 90% of the reason people don't like her is because of her voice.
Yeah. She's doing a little bit of a baby voice kind of thing. And I thought that was like,
but she's 20
intentional
playing as 15
to play.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was intentionally trying to play on, you know, her dad's affection for her and trying to act like his little girl. Mm. And that might be the case, but
I thought it was like just her trying to get into like a more immature, affect, but
it could be if you're a 20 year old trying to play 15, what do you do, right?
Little light and breathy,
but the tears feel real in this scene. I think she nails that part of it.
And the other tragedy is the phone goes off yet again, and it robs Raylan from getting a last hug from her. I'm not sure if he's going to get it from her, but that definitely put the kibosh on it. My question to you is, how does Willa come back into the plot? Does Clem lose his fucking mind, drive down to Florida, Miami, whatever, and like... Because if that happens, I would think that would be something way down in a season. Are we going to have like four or five episodes where Willa's just not even around? And then...
We might. I mean, as things get complicated with the Albanians, I could see it. Yeah.
Because she actually went on, she scanned her ticket and walked onto the jetway. I don't think you can get, like, you can't just do a UE, right? Like, once you get on the plane, maybe until they close the door.
I mean, there's a lot of things you can't do that Raylan's doing, right? You can't get to a gate without a ticket, but I guarantee what he did is flash his badge. So,
Federal agents probably can do that, but she's not, like, you know,
my father's a marshal and he's at the gate and I want to say goodbye to him, maybe Maybe they radio out and see if he's out there.
What if there's an air marshal on this flight? That could coordinate things. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder if they're going for, like, Will is going to be going away for 4 episodes, which might not be the worst thing to get. Let's just let Raylan be Raylan and then bring her in to kind of, like, wrap up this thread at the end. Or if she's going to pull some Raylan shit where she gives Tim, you know, like Raylan giving Tim the slip. I wonder if she's going to do that and just, like, you show up in the backseat of Raylan's car next episode.
Yeah, all right. Could be.
Both of them could be fun. Like, getting, you know, we talked about the problems of having, you know, trying to be an action hero with a kid around. Just letting Raylan uncork and be Raylan would be fun. But also, yeah, her being a her railing Raylan would be fun too.
Yeah. I can see it. But that's it. That's all
that is it. Like I said, I apologized. I don't have feedback this week. I just literally physically ran out of time, and we're hard up against our schedule today, trying to get a few last minute things fit in. So I will have full feedback next week. Please send in feedback to justified@boldmove.com, and we'll consider it next week. If you would like to find out all the other things we're doing, or covering Foundation, or covering Star Trek Strange New Worlds, having a lot of fun with those. If you want to know what we're going to be doing during the strike, best way to keep up with what we're doing is whatever your favorite social media is, @BaldMove. Unless it's TikTok, then it's @BaldestMove. You will be able to keep up to date with everything we're doing that way. And if you'd like to support us, you know, it takes some amount of money to keep these bits flowing and the lights on here at Bald Move. If you'd like to help us out with that, you can go to support.baldmove.com. Of course, you get a lot of stuff for your money, too. You get ad-free feeds, extra bonus audio, video content. But yeah, it helps me and Jim keep doing what we're doing here. Otherwise, we will see you on the next episode of City Primeval. Until next week, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.